So awakening spiritual wisdom. Who wants to do that? Show of hands. Who'd like to awake their spiritual wisdom? Okay, so that tells me that you believe you have some, and I believe you do. Hi, Laura. I didn't see you before. Hare Krishna. We do have spiritual wisdom. And I'm going to read from Bhagavad Gita, a quick text. Once I read the text and stop reading, then you can stop me at any time with a question or a comment, okay? So, you don't have, this isn't a lecture, this is a discussion, all right? So, promise you'll do that. You'll stop me if you think, I know you will, you're good at it. Okay, we're talking tonight in the second canto, 60th verse, 260. Itato hi api kanteya purushasya vipaschitaha indriyani pramatini haranti prasabha manha. Translation. The senses are so strong and impetuous, O Arjuna, that they forcibly carry away the mind of a man of discrimination who is endeavoring to control them. So, the next verse talks a little bit more of what to do with these senses that are so strong and impetuous that they carry us away. I'll just read the English. One who restrains his senses, keeping them under full control and fixes his consciousness upon me, is known as a man of steady intelligence. Steady intelligence is wisdom. You see? Wisdom means that intelligence is steady. Not that it's flickering. The intelligence can flicker here and flicker there. And, you know, it's like, I don't know if you've ever taken a child to the store. You go to the store and you say, look, I'm just going to go in and buy some milk. That's all we want. The child says, let me go. No, I'm just going to go get the milk and come back out. Oh, let me go. All right, but don't ask for anything because I'm just going to get milk. And as you, usually they have the milk way in the back of the store, you know. By the time you get out there, the child is one in 50 things. Can I have that? Can I have that? And it's just back and forth, you see. So our senses do this to us. Our senses pull us this way, pull us that way. You see, they're always giving us suggestions of what we should do and what we should enjoy. So the mind, which is the sixth sense, should control the senses. The mind is like the reins of a horse. And if you don't have the pull of the reins, the horse will go wherever it wants to. You can't steer the holy reins. So, one who restrains his senses, keeping them under full control, and fixes his consciousness upon me, Krishna is saying this, is known as a man of steady intelligence. Okay? So, how do we restrain the senses? Anybody got any ideas? Suggestions? Melina.
I was thinking that maybe, like Jesus said, you know, it is through the desires that one becomes desirelessness. So perhaps by recognizing what our desires are and then pulling back, we can understand how to control the senses.
Yeah, that first. I think that would help. That would help. But the senses are so wild. Arjuna tells Krishna later on in this chapter that Krishna, to control the senses, it would be easier to control the wind. So Krishna's explaining here, one who restrains the senses. How do we restrain the senses? Well, we restrain them by getting them under control, by focusing them on something spiritual. What is spiritual? What's the most spiritual thing we can think of? Krishna. Yeah. Krishna, God. So we focus on, okay, now does that mean that we're going to sit around and just go, oh, or maybe while you're driving down the road, you're, oh, will that work? Probably not. Maybe a little bit, but not really. So we have to use the senses. Our senses are not going to be satisfied if we're not tasting and seeing and touching and hearing and smelling. You see? So, let's say, let's take the sense of taste. The tongue wants to taste something, and we have to eat. So if we're going to eat something, why not make that something that we've prepared for Krishna in a loving way, using the best ingredients? We prepare it for God out of love and devotion, and we make an offering to Him. It doesn't have to be a really big, drawn-out process like we do here. It's a very, very complicated process sometimes in the temple. But at home, it doesn't have to be a really big, drawn-out thing. You can cook with God in mind. You're cooking with Krishna in mind. I want you to taste this, my Lord. I'm going to make something that I hope you like. You see? After all, you furnished everything, the vegetables and the fruits and the spices, everything comes from you. So, it's your energy that I'm using. The least I can do is offer it back to you with love. You see? So then He will accept it. He says in Bhagavad Gita, if you offer me with love and devotion, a fruit, a flower, a leaf, or water, with love and devotion, I will accept it. All right, so when you offer it to Krishna, He guarantees you that if you put the magic ingredient of love and devotion, He will accept it. So, when Krishna accepts an offering, He becomes the offering. So now you have food that has become spiritual. It has become as good as God Himself. He glances at the food. His senses are interchangeable. Our senses are not. So in other words, He can eat with His eyes. When He looks at it, he accepts the love and devotion that you've put into it. And now He's become the food. So the food is spiritualized. It's now transcendental. So you can satisfy your tongue as much as you want to. We're all going to do that later. We're going to satisfy our tongue with as much as we want to eat. And it's all spiritualized food. It's become Krishnaized. You see, Krishna has accepted it. He's taken the love and devotion, and He became the offering. So we get to eat Krishna tonight. And He tastes good. He really does. Okay? Are we following so far? How can I engage my nose? That sense. I want to smell something nice. I can offer some nice flower or some nice oil. Dr. Paul has this nice Nag Champa oil. Nag Champa is very nice. It's a very special oil from India. It's one of my favorites. And so he's offered that to Krishna. So now Krishna becomes the offering. Now he's smelling Krishna. And if you get close to him, you'll smell Krishna too. You see? We engage our eyes by seeing the deity of the Lord. You can also engage your eyes, like when I see that this wonderful eucalyptus tree out here. I think, Krishna, you have put this tree here just for our enjoyment. This tree is so wonderful. It gives us shade. It's just such a nice entity, So when we see that, I can recognize that's Krishna's energy. That's His gift to us, you see. Also, by seeing the devotees remind us of Krishna. When we see a devotee, we immediately, you can't see another Dwipra without thinking of Krishna. Immediately thinking of Krishna. He's always scheming on how to serve Krishna, how he can love Krishna a little bit more, by serving him. All the devotees here are like that. Every one of you I look at remind me of Krishna. So my eyes are engaged. We engage our ears by chanting the names of Krishna, by discussing his pastimes, by talking about how wonderful and sweet he is, by talking about his love, discussing how we can serve him, discussing how I can serve you. My dear devotee, how can I serve you? That's the main thing that we should say to one another is, how may I serve you? A lot of people that I know that have been devotees for a long time, as soon as you see them, you say their name, how may I serve you? We want to serve the devotees. You please Krishna by serving the devotees. You please the devotees by serving Krishna. So, you see. We engage our sense of touch. The devotees, when we see one another, I never did this until I was a devotee, but when a devotee sees another devotee, immediately you feel love in your heart, and you want to touch the devotee. When I was, before I became a devotee, I didn't really... I wasn't into shaking hands, you know. But you know, in business, you can shake hands. And I'd be like, oh, I'm glad to meet you, sir. I'm going to wash my hand, you know. I don't know where that hand has been. But when the devotees see each other, we want to embrace, we want to touch one another. You know, so it's pleasure, you see. So we engage all of our senses. We engage our legs in walking to the temple or to walking to the store to buy something, to cook for Krishna or whatever, you see. So we're restraining the senses by using them in service of Krishna, you see. And Krishna says, keeping them under full control. This keeps your senses under control. You see, if you don't control your senses, what happens? They control you. You're always being pulled here and there by the senses. Again, it's like having a cart that's drawn by several horses, and you don't have hold of the reins. So the horses go wherever the grass looks green. You see. But if you pick the reins up, you can make the horses go here and there. You see. So we're using the senses to satisfy Krishna's senses. You see. The misunderstanding that we have in this material world is that it's really all about me. You know, even if we don't admit it, a lot of us think it. It's all about me. You know, and I use this analogy a lot, but it paints a picture. Okay, let's say that we take a picture of the group. You know, which is a good idea. Take a picture of the group here, and then we print the picture out. And then as soon as we pass it around, right? As soon as it comes to you, who's the first person you look for? There's all these wonderful, beautiful people here. And then the picture comes in. Let me see. Am I blinking? Oh, man, the camera adds 20 pounds. It's supposed to only be 10, but it looks like 20. What kind of nonsense camera was that? Not that fat. You see, I'm the center. I'm the center of my universe. It's kind of all about me, you see. And that causes us great difficulty as we try to make it through life. It's the biggest stumbling block that we or anybody that's trying to aspire for spiritual development. The biggest stumbling block is self-interest. And a lot of people like to say, as a matter of fact, this morning, I spoke at Brooklyn's over on Campbell. Was it Campbell and Grant? Yeah. And one of the ladies said there that she felt that what's needed in the world is we need to learn to love ourselves. You ever heard that? Sounds wonderful, doesn't it? It's so poetic. But I think I'm all up inside myself too much. You know, I'm always looking for me in the picture. I'm always looking out for me and mine. I'm accepting or rejecting my friends based on how much I can enjoy them. How much enjoyment do you bring into my life, rather than how much can I bring into yours, you see? How can I serve you? How might I? We're thinking, oh, hey, you look like a nice guy. I wonder how you can serve me. Subconsciously, we think like that. That's not spiritual thought. That's material thought. I want to exploit the resources of the material world for my enjoyment. And a lot of people who aren't very spiritually advanced will say, well, what's wrong with that? What's wrong with it? It's here for us to enjoy, isn't it? So the misunderstanding that we have is that I am the enjoyer. I'm the enjoyer. I'm here to enjoy. And that's what I'm looking to do. I want to enjoy. But things that are spiritual are upside down and backwards from things that are material. It's like a reflection in a mirror. See, spiritual things are different than the material laws that we think we know so well. See. Truly, we're not here to enjoy, and we don't enjoy by trying to enjoy, or we don't even enjoy what we're enjoying. We think we do. and thinking, what does he mean? That's a lot of double talk, you know? That sounds like the sound of one hand clapping, doesn't it? It's not really saying anything. But what it's really saying is that I am not an enjoyer, I am the enjoyed. The spiritual truth is, I am to be enjoyed. I enjoy by being enjoyed. My whole purpose is to serve and cause Krishna to enjoy me by giving him love and devotion. Krishna enjoys when I cook this nice preparation. You know, when I cook something for him, I use some nice organic vegetables and fruits, and I cook it very nicely for him. See, when he enjoys it, then I feel great enjoyment. Now, if I'm just going to... you can experiment with this, you know. Let's say you're going to have the most special people in your life over for dinner. The most people you think the most of, and you've invited them over for dinner. So, you go out to the store, you know, maybe like Whole Foods. Is Whole Foods big here? Is it,
you know, big and expensive.
Big, yeah, you go to the big and expensive store. Get the nicest stuff they have, and you're gonna fix your favorite dish for them. Something you know that they're gonna love. Maybe it's not even your favorite dish. Maybe you found that they like Italian food, and you think Italian food is okay, but you found this great recipe, and you want to please them. You have a desire to please them. In other words, you have a desire to be enjoyed. You're going to enjoy when they say, wow, this was great. How did you know I like Italian? You know? See? Then you feel a great, great pleasure. So let's say you've got all this stuff and you're going to cook. Just before you start cooking, you get a text. People don't use the phone anymore. You just text. I always text. Ding, ding, your phone. Oh, no, they can't come. They've had something come up and they can't come. They're going to have to make it another night. So are you going to go ahead and cook all this nice stuff? Or are you going to make a sandwich? For yourself? Something quick, you know. Something that I like that's quick and easy. You see? So if we examine ourselves, we realize, I really enjoy making others enjoy. I enjoy when I please others. In other words, I am... my transcendental nature, my spiritual nature, is that of a servant. I'm a servant of the Supreme Lord. I'm his eternal servant. That is the absolute truth. Some people say, well, we hear a lot about the real truth in the world. About the only real truth, the only real thing that's true, absolutely true, can never ever be defeated and will never ever change, that you'll hear in this material world, is that you are an eternal servant of God. That's called true ego. Anything other than that is false ego. I am an American? No, I'm not. I'm an eternal living entity. I'm in an American's body right now. I'm a man? No, I'm not. I'm a spirit soul, and I'm in a man's body right now. You see? I'm a human being. Some living entities think that they're dogs. The dogs are just like us. They're just in dog bodies. They are really believing. Now, some people say, what they are, though. No. They're convinced that they're dogs, just like we're convinced that we're humans. We have to convince ourselves that I am an eternal living entity. I am way beyond this body. This body doesn't even represent me. This body represents some desires that I had in a previous life. And out of those desires, I was moved to perform certain actions. And those actions created reactions. That's called the law of karma. My desires caused me to do actions. Actions created reactions. So here I am. I have the reaction to my previous life. You see? That's all it is. I didn't change. And I won't change when I give this body up and take another body. I don't change, but I pass into another body and I'll be convinced that maybe next time I'll be convinced that I'm a dog or a cat or a parakeet. Or you don't want to be a parakeet. You You know what I mean? I don't want to be a dog either. Yeah, somebody once told me I was once a dog in my last life. Anyway, we just discussed that later. So, you see where we're going with this? I think I'm this, and I think I'm that, when really the truth is, I am an eternal servant of Krishna. I am not a human being searching for a spiritual experience. I'm a spiritual being searching for a human experience. You see? There's never been a time when I did not exist. There's never going to be a time when I'll cease to be. So, my senses are causing me to do certain things, and I'm suffering or enjoying certain reactions. So, Lord Krishna says that if you want to be of steady intelligence, you will control the senses. If you control the senses by becoming his servant, now you become real. The only truth is that you are servant. God is the supreme, and we're all living entities, are his servant. That's the only truth. So if this microphone is being used for anything other than serving Krishna, that's really not true. It's as if it's not even happening. It's a useless experience. Any activity that you do that is not in relationship to serving God is false. Some people argue, no, it's really happening. It's not. It's a temporary thing that you're doing in a temporary body and you're going to pass on. But things that you do that are real, such as anything you do to serve God, that is true. That is real. That really happened. You see? Even though you're confined in this material world, you're performing transcendental activities. You're performing the activities that you would perform in the liberated stage. You see? So the devotees of Krishna are trained on how to do the same activities now, in this lifetime, as you will do when you're liberated from this material world. You see? When you get out of the circle of birth and death, repeated birth and death, and you're liberated, what will you be doing? Some people think, well, I'll just be energy. Okay. Anybody ever thought about that? I'm going to be, a lot of people think like that now. I'm just energy. I'm going to go merge with the supreme energy. Okay, so you go and you merge with the supreme energy. Now what? You can do this too, if you want to. You can, if you try real, real hard, you can go merge with the effulgence coming from Krishna. So let's say you go there. What are you going to do? What's the first thing you're going to do, Sean?
Yeah,
did
they just explain how when we're in association with Krishna in our eternal world, it's ecstatic. It's pure ecstasy. So the absolute truth of being the eternal servitor of Krishna, that ecstatic bliss we feel, I mean, I feel it terrible as much as speak of being in the spiritual world. Is that the conjugal relationship where
the conjugal relationship with Krishna is only one of several. You can be his friend also. You can be his parent. You can have a loving relationship with him as if you were his parent. You're not going to give birth to him, but he will behave as your child. With Krishna, you can be his superior. You can have a relationship with him where you're his superior. Now, a lot of people never think of God as being like that. God, he's always the top guy. Well, of course he's God. He's always going to be God. But if out of love you seek a relationship like mother, what if you want to be his mother? There's going to be times when you're going to have to chastise him. You see? Just because he's God doesn't mean he's going to be a perfect child. He's going to be very naughty. So, does that make any sense? So, the truth is we're all servants, part and parcel, and servants of God. We can achieve liberation into the impersonal conception. It's possible. any of us could do it. It's very difficult, but you could do it if you're determined. But and that's very popular. Many people have brought that from India and peddled it. And some people say, "Well, I want to merge with this, with the what do you call it, the universal energy." You know, in other words, I don't want God to have a personality. If He has a personality, He may ask me to do something. And if He's going to ask me to do something, He might ask me to do something I don't want to do. Where is the love and devotion? In other words, I don't want to be a servant of God. If you don't want to be a servant of God, you're denying the truth. So you can go merge into that energy. But it's not satisfying. Because what do you get? Very few people think very far. Think ahead. What do you get if you go there? Some people say, "I get shanti. I get peace." Okay, so here you are. You're liberated and you're peaceful. Now what? You see? The personalist says, I want to regain my lost true identity with Krishna as His personal servant. I want to walk with Him. I want to hug Him. He's attractive. He's the most attractive. He's the most beautiful. He smells better than Dr. Paul. I mean, can you imagine? We smell things that come from Krishna. They emanate from Him. How good could He smell? It emanates from Him. How beautiful could He possibly be? We can't even imagine. We want to get close. We want to have Him. You see? We want to associate. We want to make Him smile. I want to cook Him something really great and make Him grin and say, "That's wonderful." You see? How great will you feel when you do something that pleases the Supreme? The Supreme feeling. You'll feel supremely wonderful. You see? So, maybe you and I can talk a little later. I've got something else I've got to move on to right now. So, all right, we're going to move on to something else. Probably have time going on. But thank you all for your attention. I appreciate it. And if you have any questions or further discussions, I'll be acting right as out of time. But while we're eating, we can all gather around and talk. I can talk and eat at the same time. So if you can, then we'll get along just fine. So thank you so much, and we'll move on to something else.